I just don't like they won, like there was a bid and they won the rights to right. a selling blank franchise.
It's like when I looked up and realized that the NBA All-Star Game is in Cleveland this year.
No way.
I was like, why? How did that happen? Why is that happening?
Is that
why
true?
Is any of this happening? Yes. The NFL has like cornered the market on like cities you'd actually want to go to when it's cold. And the NBA is just showing us, you know, and glory to it. Just the glories of America's Rust Belt for like the next couple of years. It's like real, real fun circuit of all-star host cities coming up in the NBA.
I respect it. I mean, I'm going to be sad that Indianapolis is not hosting the NFL Combine in February. It's like the one event that actually works in the NFL where it's not like total chaos and they're just getting destroyed so we can move to LA.
Yeah. And had some good nights in Indy.
Oh, yeah. Had some bad nights in Indy, too.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's the same nights.
Seen some NFL people have some bad nights, too, in Indy, which is one of the finest reasons to go. You'll just encounter a random head coach blackout drunk. Who will it be? That is the game you have to play with your friends at the NFL Combine.
Wow. And I feel like, you know, in this mental image I have, there is just, like, that shrimp sauce everywhere. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Right? You're just doused in that shrimp sauce.
Don't even get me started on saying that place is the most overrated steakhouse in the world, bro. Like I spent like $80 on a prime rib that I could have made better in my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Pablo, you remember, Josh, you remember the molasses flood in Boston around the turn of like the 20th century? I feel like Indianapolis is prime for a shrimp cocktail flood where it's just the spicy sauce just flooding through the streets of Indianapolis. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm worried it's going to with the Combine leaving next year.
Full disclosure here, when Bill Barnwell said, hey, you remember that molasses flood in Boston? I kind of nodded as if that's a thing I should have known. But then I realized I don't have to pretend. Charles, you have no idea what that is either, right?
I have no idea what that is, which is why I'm glad he asked you, because I didn't want to leave Bill hanging like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about, man. I have no idea what that is.
This happened. It sounds like something I made up. Like I just feel like a Mad Libs, like blank. Flood. A molasses flood happened in Boston. Please, I could use a producer interjection right about now to get some backup on this thing. It happened, and it's going to happen in Indianapolis. Hey, there we go.
Alabaster,
so, what's your ruling?
Please.
So before I give a ruling, and before we give more details on this molasses flood, I'm going to give a very thirsty plea for you to all tweet out the show to this link. So the first thing our viewers will see is this molasses flood.
I just did. I tweeted it out as I was about to tell the molasses story. I was just loading it up in my brain. Went ahead and did it.
I'll tweet out
the magic of having an Android.
Android. All those green bubbles finally paid off for something.
All those people not responding to my text messages. All the group chats I've been left off of because we don't want them in our group chat. Finally.
I'm going to tweet out live molasses flood content on Debatable.
That's right.
Phil Barnwell.
So.
And at Four Verts. So, okay.
The great molasses flood happened on January 15th, 1919 in the north end of Boston. Yes. A large tank filled with 2.3 million gallons of molasses weighing 1,300 short tons burst and molasses rushed through the streets. Locals say they could smell molasses in the streets of the North End for decades after on a hot summer day.
Wow.
I shouldn't be laughing.
That sounds like we're saying that's a bad thing.
Where did you learn that, Bill?
There were tragedies.
It's just part of like living in Boston for a while. You just get some weird osmosis stuff happening. Like you just learn about molasses. Like
Bill was like, why does this place still smell like molasses?
Right. Right. I went to Pizzeria Regina and I was like, this is not a pizza smell to me. And I learned that's because there was an enormous molasses flood. Now, to bring it full circle, guys, this is the biggest flood we have seen until the flood of NFL news.
Wow.
This morning.
Wow. Nice transition.
What a segue into the top of Debatable, a fake television show where we debate nothing. That is Bill Barnwell, expert on football and floods. And below is Charles McDonald, who will prove his worth to us very shortly, Alabaster.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
That sounds kind of menacing.
It was a little menacing. Our first topic Does hiring Nathaniel Hackett make you think the Broncos can lure Aaron Rodgers to Denver?
Okay, so before the show, I became privy via our group chat, in which Bill is shooting green bubbles into the sky, that the reason that the Broncos have made this hire, it comes with a kind of hilarious backstory, because the Jacksonville Jaguars apparently had parked their private jet, right, in Green Bay. And the interpretation from Jacksonville was that it's clearly, okay, well, you know, they would want Nathaniel Hackett as their head coach. But and turns out that Adam Schefter is reporting that, in fact, maybe the Jaguars were just interested in Vic Fangio, right?
Are the Jaguars interested in Vic Fangio, or is Trent Baalke interested in Vic Fangio?
Yes.
Anytime on Twitter, or if you have followed Trent Baalke's career throughout his time in the NFL, he's not the most popular character, I think it's fair to say. And Trent, you know, he's got to latch himself onto someone that will allow him to keep that job as long as possible. So why not call up the buddy that you had as your defensive coordinator in San Francisco during the best four-year stretch of your career? Makes total sense.
So basically, Bill, what we have here potentially is a situation where the Denver Broncos got their new head coach because, you know, there was confusion as to who the other team was trying to hire. Can you, like, spell this out for us a little more clearly here?
I mean, this is a rare one. We do not see this very often, and it alerted some people in NFL circles. This is the rare accidental Jaguars okey-doke. Not seen very often in NFL history. I mean, I don't think the Jaguars were trying to mislead the Broncos into hiring Nathaniel Hackett, but because they happened to fly their private jet, I think it was to Denver, because that's where Vic Fangio is, and I think Nathaniel Hackett was there as well, maybe interviewing with the Broncos.
That's right. That's right.
It kind of swung things a bit. And I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that an NFL team would hire someone just out of the fear that someone's going to get on a private jet and fly to Jacksonville. But granted, I have to admit, I have never been on a private jet. I flew to Jacksonville, but on U.S. Airways, which is the opposite of a private jet. Maybe
the
that
Jacksonville
would change
of Airways.
maybe that would change my feelings about this matter if that was an opportunity presented to me. And I think I want to hear what Charles thinks, actually, because when it comes to Nathaniel Hackett, like, I recognize that he's going to get interviews because of his job at the moment, which was the Packers offensive coordinator. But is there something missing here that I'm not seeing when it comes
that
to
is my question
being
too.
like a good coaching candidate?
To me, with Nathaniel Hackett, when you look at like the times that the offense has like really been underneath his control, the results haven't been all that great. You know, I think one of the best offenses that he had was probably that, you know, 2017 Jaguars offense that finished like slightly above average just in terms of how they compared to the rest of the league. And then, you know, they're held up by like a borderline all-time pass defense. So, you know, I think for Nathaniel Hackett, the question for fans and for people who don't know him is just kind of like, you know, that scene in Office Space where they ask him, what exactly do you do here? Because if he's not calling plays in Green Bay, and it's been a while since he's done that, I think it's fair for Broncos fans to ask, what exactly are we getting here in Nathaniel Hackett? Because there's not much tangible stuff for fans to go off of in terms of, you know, talking about this hire.
But what they do have is the hope that Aaron Rodgers comes with Nathaniel Hackett, right? That's what this is all about. Alabaster has been patting very lightly with his tiny alabaster hands a card, which is a quote from Aaron Rodgers in November. And Aaron Rodgers had said, quote, I hope Hackett doesn't go anywhere unless I do. And so clearly, like, the best reason to hire Nathaniel Hackett in any universe would be if you get Aaron Rodgers as a result. I just have never heard of Nathaniel Hackett as a coaching candidate that is worthwhile outside of that specific universe.
I mean, I think first and foremost, I'd like to know what Nathaniel Hackett feels about that, given the possibility that Aaron Rodgers is contagious. I would want to maybe go with him, but maybe in a separate compartment of the same place on the way there.
Yeah, a lot of plexiglass and stuff.
Yes, exactly. I guess working backwards here, like, if Nathaniel Hackett doesn't deliver Aaron Rodgers to Denver, like, what is the basis for this happening here? I mean, a guy who, let's review his entire pro career in the course of like 20 seconds. Bills offensive coordinator early in his 30s. They were like 25th and 26th in the Football Outsiders DVOA stat. He goes to Jacksonville, follows Doug Marrone there. He's the quarterbacks coach, I believe. Gets promoted to OC. Just Charles mentioned that 1 year, the Jaguars make it to the Super Bowl with an incredibly defensive-heavy team. They're like 17th in DVOA. That's his best season by far as a pro. He lasts another year in Jacksonville, gets fired again, goes to the Packers, becomes their OC, is next to Aaron Rodgers, as Aaron Rodgers does a lot of great stuff, and now he's a head coaching candidate? And on top of that, if you're the Broncos, you're convinced that the Jaguars, this team that fired Nathaniel Hackett like 3 years ago, has changed their mind so significantly, they're going to hire him as their head coach this time around? Like, that seems so mind-boggling to me. And I think if you're the Broncos, like, this resume is paper thin unless you actually believe Nathaniel Hackett is not only probably going to bring you Aaron Rodgers, but he's absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt going to convince the Packers and going to convince Aaron Rodgers to make that trade. Now, the Packers said Aaron Rodgers would have some say in where he goes. I believe that would actually happen.
Well, this is an important clarification, Bill, because is a deal that has to be agreed upon, right? It's not that Aaron Rodgers is a free agent here. It's that him...
That's the problem.
Yes, and Hackett are a package deal that actually needs to be consented to by the Packers here.
See, yes. I kind of wonder if the Broncos brass, they're watching that game on Sunday night and going, oh, my God. And the other guy in the division didn't even make the playoffs. And the last time we saw the other guy in the division, he was converting, what, like 6 or 7 fourth downs and throwing touchdowns on 4th and 20? So, you know, maybe the Broncos are looking at this. Like, let's just give them a little bit benefit of the doubt and let's put some strategy behind this. Maybe they're looking at it as like, if we don't get Aaron Rodgers, we are screwed for the next however long it takes us to get a quarterback anyways. So maybe it doesn't really matter who our head coach is, because we still have to play Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert 4 times a year. So if we can get the guy who just give us a chance to get number 12 over here, that might be worth going through this process just so you can compete sooner rather than later in the division.
But it all reminds me, Bill, it reminds me of when the Knicks hired Royal Ivy as an assistant on their team in an attempt to lure Kevin Durant, who actually was a free agent. Kevin Durant was like, nah, no thanks. And the Knicks, at the very least, had like this random guy on their staff just hanging out. This, though, would be more than just a random guy. This would be the guy running, theoretically, right, your football team.
Yes, and that's what I think the question is here. Like, that makes sense to me. But how far are you willing to go? Like, are the Broncos going to hire Joe Rogan to be their offensive coordinator? Will Miles Teller be taking over quarterback coaching duties? Like, how far are you willing to go down this road to get Aaron Rodgers on your roster? Because I feel like if you're going to go with Nathaniel Hackett as your head coach, like, you might as well just go 5 steps deeper. Like, bring in the State Farm guy. Bring in the State Farm dude to be your linebackers coach. Why not? Like,
feed,
go for it. Go all in for Aaron Rodgers. Yes.
Isn't that what his that part of the whole Hollywood circle he runs in is clay eating? By the way, as a quick interjection here, were you guys aware of Vinny Testapositive as a nickname? Because I learned that yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a one seat. Vinny Testapositive is a one seat.
Yeah. Justice. So I had a little Twitter space with my buddy Justice because he was pouting about the Packers
game. That's who taught it be.
And he said just to clear his conscience, he needed to get through and put together this tournament of nicknames for Aaron Rodgers. To me, nothing's better than Rush Lambeau. I can't get past that. That's a top one to me.
Oh, it's so good.
Finney tested positive. A 6 seed, shockingly low. I think we should be talking about that. It's just poor work on Justice's part.
Agreed.
Yeah, let me actually give you the bracket while we're here. So number one on the bracket is Thoreau Rogan up against the 8 seed, let's go Brandon Whedon. Also strong. The 5-4 matchup, we got Pitch McConnell against Chucker Carlson. Two solid candidates. And then I think here we have the bracket that is going to get America's attention. Rush Lambeau versus Vinny Testapositive, a 3 versus 6 seed matchup. And then my second favorite match, guys, is the 7 seed versus the 2 seed. We have Breitbart Star, which was my favorite before Vinny Testapositive, up against QB Giuliani. And that one is like...
Wow.
Well done.
Breitbart Star. Justice. Oh, my God.
So, oh. So on all of that, though, I guess the question, even beyond the Hackett stuff and whether he can sort of lure Aaron Rodgers via some sort of complicated Rube Goldberg transactional device, is whether, like, Aaron Rodgers as the football player looks any different to you guys after what you've seen this year. Because obviously MVP regular season campaign, or so we think, followed by a playoff exit that raised questions about his dependence on his human binky, Devontae Adams, who might be coming to Denver too if they play their cards right, as well as just other alleged limitations in his game. Does anything about this season change how you see Rodgers as the football player?
No, not really. I mean, that last game is definitely disappointing. But, you know, to me, when you look at it with, like, in conjunction with the tally of, like, the whole season, it's just one game that was bad in a very, very, you know, extreme environment in terms of weather. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo on the other side, he didn't play his best game either, and they still ended up squeaking out that win somehow, just magically, beautifully. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm getting a call from Jeff Garcia. Should I take it or ignore it?
Tell him I said he can meet me in Temecula.
Yes.
Jeff, we're going to meet you in Temecula. Okay. Yeah. But, and also, I know you're charging $90 on Cameo. It feels like a lot. So if you want to bring that down a touch, we can, in fact, work this out. Okay, thank you. Bye, Jeff Garcia.
But, you know, I do think if you're a team that's interested in trading for Aaron Rodgers, I don't think this season changed anything for you, really, because he did have an MVP caliber campaign. And then you kind of get the one game sample at the end. That's crappy. But I think if you are level-headed, this probably doesn't dissuade you from the idea of getting him. But I think, you know, kind of got to remember that Aaron Rodgers is 38, about to be 39. Like, you got to wonder how much of this is left on his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Broncos, like, Teddy Bridgewater played, I thought, pretty solid football this year, but you kind of spent the last 3 years dealing with Drew Lock, who is the postseason Aaron Rodgers against the 49ers, just pretty much all the time. So, like, yes, you're a little worried about that last game, but I think, like, if you're going to take a swing, this is the guy to take a swing on. Like, there's going to be other quarterbacks who are out there, and Jimmy Garoppolo is probably going to be available, and we know how good Jimmy Garoppolo is. I think, like, this is the shot to take. If you can get Rodgers again. Oh, kind of.
Yeah, he just keeps on calling. I mean,
come
sorry.
On, Jeff.
Yeah.
It's like he wants attention. It's weird. I don't understand. Like, if you can get Rodgers and Devontae Adams, I think that's a deal you have to take every single day of the week.
Okay, so the Devontae Adams thing, right? How does that fit into all of this? What do you expect the Packers to be doing? Because obviously the franchise tag is in play. What do you see happening with Devontae Adams?
We expect them to put the franchise tag on, right? Just so they can control what happens in the offseason, whether it's a contract extension or a trade. And I guess you're still kind of hung up on what happens with Aaron, because I imagine that if Aaron leaves, getting Devontae back to Green Bay would not be the easiest task in the world. So, you know, I think with the Packers, you're probably going to see him slap the franchise tag on Devontae. And then really, I feel like it's kind of Aaron's call on what happens next with Devontae, which is, you know, kind of amazing because, you know, that's a lot of power for someone to have over your career. But when you look at the, you know, the repertoire that they have, it makes sense that they might want to go play together again.
Some people would say this offseason is going to be Aaron's party, and I'm excited to see it yet again for the first time in many years.
Oh, God. So wait, on the just the very first thing we led this discussion with on that whole Jaguars aspect, like, how do you feel, by the way, if you're a Jaguars fan? Because on the one hand, Bill, it feels like, hey, we just did maybe an inadvertent okey-doke, right?
Yes.
On the other hand, if the okey-doke were to sort of check out factually, it also turns out that you're interested in Vic Fangio.
there's a gap. You know, not all okey-dokes always make sense. Sometimes it just feels good to feel clever as opposed to actually doing something good for yourself. But I mean,
we've both secretly eaten garbage.
Yeah. But now you're on our level, which is the very bottom. I mean, I think Vic Fangio is not a viable head coaching candidate, but I mean, we've seen reports today that Trent Baalke's job might be up for grabs. Byron Leftwich has been the hot rumor for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and there's reports that he wants to bring in Adrian Wilson, the former Cardinals safety, to be his general manager and kick Trent Baalke out of a job. So it feels like this is just a desperate ploy from Trent Baalke, who has just kind of stuck around between the Dave Caldwell era, between the Urban Meyer era, and now into this third era with a new head coach to hold on to his job by bringing in someone he's familiar with. I think that's pretty transparent, but stranger things have happened with the Jaguars organization over the past decade. So anything's on the table here.
This looks like Balke is just trying to cling to anything that he can to stay in power and keep that job, because you know it's hard to imagine the first time head coaching prospect being excited about the idea of working with Trent Baalke, given to what he, you know, given to how his era with Jim Harbaugh, who is a much more accomplished coach than Byron Leftwich at this point, how that ended and he was able to win that power struggle. I would be very wary of walking into the same situation with less experience and less power on my resume.
And I mean, Byron Leftwich has leverage here. Like, Byron Leftwich is going to have other opportunities. Brian Daboll, same situation. Like, those guys have a lot of leverage because there's not a lot of very exciting offensive coaches available. This offseason, Hackett doesn't have the same resume that a Daboll has or Leftwich has. So I feel like they can kind of pick their shots a little bit and have more say than maybe your typical first-year offensive head coach coming into a new organization.
Yeah, yeah. Alabaster? Have we done enough Broncos content, do you think? Did we check that box? Where are we?
Oh, sorry.
Did we get molasses taken care of? Oh, no. Wow.
Alabaster.
Right. Moving on.
Burning us.
Another dissatisfied superstar. Our question is, should the Nets be more open to trading James Harden before he can opt out this summer?
So I love where we are in this news cycle, because finally the Sixers are getting some fun leaks. I love a fun leak. All we've gotten is bad leaks. Now we get fun leaks. I hear that James Harden is very dissatisfied with Kyrie Irving being a part-time player. Love to hear that. I hear that Daryl Morey is still pining for James Harden. And in fact, James Harden is still pining for Daryl Morey. Also love to hear that. Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report says that James Harden might test free agency this offseason and is frustrated with Kyrie and disappointed with Steve Nash. Fantastic. So to me, should the Nets have not thrown cold water on the rumors that James Harden wants out and in fact considered the fact that you could get someone like, I don't know, Ben Simmons for him? I think, yes, they did that a little bit too soon. My only gripe is, I just love the idea that come the offseason, James Harden, by the way, unlike Aaron Rodgers, will be an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you even have to trade for that guy, like if you're Daryl Morey, you're thinking, wait a minute, why am I giving up Ben Simmons for him? I'm just going to wait.
Right.
Like, why do I have to do any of this? Why do I have to sign and trade?
Yeah, I just kind of wonder what the incentive for trading for James Harden is right now. I mean, obviously getting James Harden is great and, you know, getting the league leader in assists and someone who knows the dynamic score. But, you know, if you want to play the long game, that's also a very viable strategy for you. But, you know, just in terms of the Nets, I don't know. I kind of think they should hold on to him and just see if you can get Kyrie. I know it's a long shot, but just see if you can talk something to Kyrie, because you got James to win the championship. And I understand why James is frustrated, because one of the two reasons why you came here is actively not showing up or showing up to half the things that you need to show up to. So I understand why he's frustrated. But I think for the Nets, it's hard to get a core this good. And you just might want to see if you can patch this over before you really decide to blow it up.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the Nets have had, what, I think it's 14 games so far with their big three in place playing together over the course of the last two seasons. I mean, James Harden got traded pretty early last season, if I'm not mistaken. It's been 14 games in total through the regular season and the postseason for the Nets with their big three, and they're 11-3 in those games. It's not like it's been a failure when they've been on the court. They just have not been on the court together. It kind of feels like this could really change based on what happens over the final two or three months of the season. We could see New York change their vaccine rules, and we could see Kyrie Irving come in to play home games. We could see them get together in the postseason and play really well. We could see it totally fall apart, have it be an obvious trade. Here is the question that I have for you guys, though, because this is something that I feel like we're not talking about with this James Harden story. Has there ever been a single athlete in the history of modern sports who you are more sure would be hated by Philadelphia fans after like a month than James Harden? Because there's two kind of athletes who succeed in Philadelphia. There's tryhards and there's like super athletes. And James Harden is like this like languid guy. His like demeanor is very chill. His defense kind of inconsistent. Doesn't always seem like he wants to be there. Like he is the opposite of what would go over in Philadelphia.
Bill, before you salt the earth on this dream for me, can we play the role of James Harden's hypothetical Philadelphia media relations counselors? Because if you were to advise James Harden as to what to say, I feel like we could make some good headway here, right? Because if you're James Harden, what you want to do, of course, and I can't say this word, I have to say Stan, I can't say simp anymore, but you gotta be, you gotta really grovel, right? Mm-hmm. You need to talk to the fans how you know they want to be talked to. And in your guys' understanding from Eagles and as well as the Sixers, like, what do they actually want to hear?
I don't know. Bill, what do you think?
I feel like they want to hear that you are going to work hard. And it doesn't mean that you're actually, whether you work hard or not, does not really matter. Like, they will latch onto something that is totally random, that has nothing to actually do with your level of play, and use that to either denigrate you or treat you as a god. I feel like there's no actual relevance to how good you are or how well you play. It's just about, like, just giving the right body image, the right body language. And I just, James Harden does not strike me as that.
I do think that if you have James Harden with Joel Embiid, I think Joel Embiid personality-wise might cover up a lot for James Harden. And the first time you see a Joel Embiid, James Harden pick and roll, or a Joel Embiid, James Harden alley-oop, you're going to be right back in your seats.
So, getting real excited. Logically, yes. I'm with you. I just think that James Harden needs to show up to his first post-game presser with like an actual lunch pail. Like wear a hard hat, you know? Like, make yourself bleed a little, even though that didn't happen during the game. Talk about how much you love to win, so much that you can't go to sleep. Yes, and perhaps also have someone erase embarrassing pictures of yourself from when you definitely did not try at all and did the opposite of all of that to get traded out of Houston. Get those erased from the internet as well, as Alabaster holds up that photo of what apparently was towels, is what we were told. Just towels James Harden was using under that shirt.
Can I throw an idea out there? And this is very unconventional for a Daryl Morey player. Come to the press conference to say, I hate analytics. I think that's going to work.
Yes.
This is a move that we don't see enough people do. And I feel like it's a smart way to go about things.
You know what I love as James Harden, new Philadelphia 76er? I love results.
Yeah.
I don't like process. I'm about results.
Distrust the process. That's what James Harden said.
Distrust the process. It's perfect. We're moving on. It's 2022. Process is over. Oh,
man. Yeah. So look.
I think that's the way to do it.
Here are the reasons why like James Harden would, in fact, re-up with the Nets in order to do a sign-and-trade just for accounting's sake. Apparently, James Harden, and this is a pretty good argument, I must admit, James Harden could have the richest contract in NBA history if he signs with the Nets. They could extend him, supermax him, full extension, all that. Mm-hmm. The Sixers theoretically can only offer 4 years, so they would orchestrate it that way. But to me, like Bill laid out all of those possibilities, like, well, there's a lot that could still happen, right, in this season for the Nets. I'm going to count on disaster. Like I'm just gonna count on the fact that the vaccine mandate's not gonna change.
No, I don't think it's going to.
The post-game presser, Charles, I wanna see is the level of passive aggression that comes when you lose a game at home, in part because Kyrie Irving isn't playing at home in the postseason. Which again is unprecedented in how funny and how awful all of that discourse is going
to
be.
Yeah, I think anyone banking on the rules in New York to be changed can be pretty disappointed. And I just can't believe that they're actually kind of in this arrangement with Kyrie. Like, okay, we got to the point, you got to play half the games. And just when you get to the playoffs, like, are you just going to flip-flop? Like, if we're home, you get four Kyrie games, or you get three Kyrie games. If we're on the road, you get four Kyrie games. It's just insane, you know, all the things that have happened to, you know, these group of players. And I think that, you know, I don't think that anyone would be like surprised if you said a couple years ago, you know, if we put Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving in the same thing, same team, there might be some problems, but the like actual problems that have come out of it are beyond, I think, what anyone could have imagined.
That's a really good point, actually. If you, the NBA won't let you do it, but I feel like they should let you do it. If you're the Nets and you're entering a playoff series, do you offer the opposing team to play all seven games on the road at their arena? Because then you can use Kyrie. I feel like that's a really interesting choice to be made.
It is.
Forfeit a home game in the playoffs so that we can get Kyrie back.
No, yeah. I mean, what? Of course, after yelling distrust the process, what we're going to get to is the Nets tanking for a better seed in the playoffs. And by better, I mean worse. So they get that one extra road game. God.
And then the year after that comes the real tank.
Yes, exactly. They're back in the tank. It's like 3 years where your Nets season tickets were worth something. And now it's back to me paying $5 walking into Nets games when I wanted to go to Nets games when I lived in Brooklyn. I will also point out, by the way, I think Ben Simmons a great fit for the Nets on multiple levels. You don't need another guy who's going to take a bunch of shots. He's the perfect like counter to what they have. He's great on defense. Also, I've lived in Brooklyn. Australian dudes, they kill in Brooklyn. It is the best place to be an Australian person. And like someone who also like, you know, plays basketball, but doesn't like, he like plays with the game, but doesn't really play directly at the game. Like he's like, you know, not really engaging directly with the thing. I feel like that will go over very well in Brooklyn.
You're saying a kind of ironically compositioned Australian would just do gangbusters in the borough of Brooklyn.
100%. That is based on firsthand experience. I've seen it happen. I was jealous of it when it was happening. I tried to emulate it myself. I couldn't.
Joy, does that mean you tried to affect an Australian accent?
Of course I did.
Is that what
I
we're
did.
Talking about?
Of course I did.
How'd that go for you, Bill? How did that Australian accent go?
It went crikey, I believe is how it went.
Wow.
Fortunately for me.
So not great. If that was it, it didn't go well for you.
No. I started with crikey. I figured that was the one thing I could base the accent off of, and that was already so bad that the rest of it didn't work out.
Okay.
I'm just glad we got through a whole Nets Sixers discussion, Alabaster, and the biggest punching bag was not Ben Simmons. It was, in fact, Bill Barnwell's Australian accent. Oh, yeah.
That's me. That's me getting about to be swatted by an actual Australian person pretending to do their accent. Exactly.
All right, moving back to football for our next topic. Do you expect Sean Payton to return to coaching?
I cannot begrudge this man at all. I feel like the number one lesson, guys, if you've watched sports television for any amount of time in the last like 20 years now, is you should want to be more like Charles Barkley and less like a person who actually has to work hard to do their job. Mm-hmm. Like, go be a guy on TV. It's so much more fun. There's a lot of money in it. You don't have to work as hard. You can be beloved. Like, I can see him returning eventually, but I get why he'd want to, I don't know, take a 5-year sabbatical if he needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he gets back in it eventually. I don't know. I think Sean is just, I don't know him or anything, but just from, you know, being a Falcons fan and having to endure this for like the better part of 20 years, He just seems like someone who just loves to compete too much. I don't know. And I know that, you know, the TV opportunities are nice, but I don't know. It's someone with Sean's temperament, like being just stuck doing TV all the time. It doesn't quite compute for me. And I also can't get this one thought out of my mind that I have, is that Sean Payton started Taysom Hill for those 5 games last year just so he could beat the Falcons twice. With Taysom Hill. I wholeheartedly believe that. And if I believe that about Sean Payton, then I have to believe at some point after he gets a little sabbatical, takes a vacation, he's going to come back and be the same troll head coach that he was.
That's a very good point.
I'm happy we had Charles on the show to talk about Sean Payton. This is great.
Well, Bill, the other thing that is making me laugh when I think about what Sean Payton leaves behind is that balance sheet. Like, just the fact that you pull the parachute cord and the Saints are looking like what exactly right now?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be, like, passable. But, like, there's been this whole weird thing. Like, I wrote about the Saints cap a decade ago, and I've been writing about it ever since. And there's, like, this, like, backlash to the idea that they have a bad cap situation. Like, oh, no, it's actually good. They're going to be fine. They're just going to, you know, restructure these 10 guys. It's going to be okay. Like, the backlash is now worse than the actual initial lash. Like, yes, they are going to be able to field the football team with a bunch of talented players. And yes, they are going to be in trouble because they don't have the same amount of depth they had to work with in years past because they can't afford those guys. They don't have the same sort of ability to add players in free agency they had in recent years because they don't have a lot of cap space to work with. And by the way, last year, their quarterbacks were Jameis Winston making, I think, like $3 or $4 million a year. Taysom Hill, whose contract is basically a credit card scam. Ian Book and Trevor Siemian. And they almost made it to the postseason because they have a great defense. And they had Sean freaking Payton as their offensive coordinator. And that's no longer going to be the case. So now it fundamentally changes what you have the ability to do on offense. So I don't think Sean Payton is retiring because the Saints are in bad cap shape, because they can make the cap work and be okay. But it does feel a little iffy that they had Drew Brees forever and kept trying to win and kept pushing it back. And, oh, we'll deal with it in the future. And the future came and Drew Brees left and Sean Payton followed him out the door a year later. I don't think that was on purpose, but it's interesting that it worked out that way.
Yeah, 15 years is also a long time to be in one spot. And even though the Saints were competitive last year in the first year, like first full year without Drew Brees, I can't imagine that that was as fun as coaching those same Drew Brees teams. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, it doesn't take a genius to look at Drew Brees and Taysom Hill and figure out, oh, there are some big differences here in the way that they operate and how efficient they can be. So, you know, I think Sean might have just said, hey, man, it's been 15 years. We accomplished a lot, got a Super Bowl ring. I don't know if I really feel like seeing this, like seeing through a rebuild after we've been competitive all this time. And I don't know where he's going to pop up in a few years, but I imagine that he will definitely be back because, once again, he cannot help himself.
Hold on. Let me take this. Hello? Yeah, Jeff, stop. What do you want? We're doing debatable. Yeah, I know you know that. You're asking if Charles McDonald ever played quarterback, and therefore how can he possibly criticize Taysom Hill now? Really? We're doing this? Jeff, stop it. Stop calling us.
That's even worse because it's probably a Canadian number, so you know you're paying extra for that too. Even worse with Jeff Garcia. Doesn't even have the respect to call you on Skype, so it's free. Insulting.
I mean, but on the Taysom Hill thing, though, because I do want to laugh at that. Did that change anything about how we understand Sean Payton? Like, Charles, the idea that Taysom Hill was the guy that he put real money into, that he beat your Atlanta Falcons with, that all of that happened. Does that change anything about how you understand the man we're talking about here?
Interjection.
Alabaster, you want in Charles, on this?
Charles, we lost your mic, if you can refresh VMix.
Oh, no. Pablo,
they were great points, though.
Oh, no.
I heard they were great. Pablo, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned that Sean Payton was putting real money into Taysom Hill. The way you're talking about Taysom Hill makes you think that this is an NFT. Is that possible that Sean Payton just sees Taysom Hill as like an alternative way of investing in crypto?
Yeah, I'm not saying that Sean Payton definitely allegedly laundered money through Taysom Hill, but I can't say that he didn't do that allegedly either.
Can we get the allegedly tag up, please, quickly, before
it's
censored for allegedly crypto. Thank you very much.
Also, should we talk about Charles? Are you back? Is Charles' mic?
Yeah, I think I'm back now.
Yes.
Yes.
Now I can't hear Charles.
There we go. Okay. So what I want to clarify also, because Charles had established, and we heard him, he'd established that Sean Payton as a troll, as a tinkerer, was merely a guy with so much job security that he started like messing around with some shit. And that was Taysom Hill. Allegedly messing around with some shit. what are we to make of the coincidence here that, you know, Paul Blart's depicting Sean Payton, and he was like, you know what?
That's true.
I uncoincidentally need to get out of this job.
Okay, with the Paul Blart, Sean Payton stuff, I just love how they just like to, this is what made me so frustrated. They're treating it like it's this heartwarming story. And I think that just like the premise of, oh, you know, NFL coach goes to coach, you know, dinky high school little league team
this
for a year.
This is a good point.
It's funny. But in the trailer, no one ever asks Sean, why are you here at this school? Sean, what happened? You were just in the Super Bowl. Things were just going good for you. You were making it real far in the playoffs. Why are you here? No one seems to want to ask that question in the trailer. And these are the questions that I need to bring to Netflix, because we can't just allow this man to go ahead and clean up his image by saying, oh, we're going to do this little buddy cop movie. No, Sean, like, we're going to be honest with what happened here. And we can't have Kevin James hiding that stuff up.
Well, I think that's the question. I haven't seen the Netflix TV show yet, or the Netflix movie yet. Is there a scene where Kevin James orders whoever's playing Greg Williams to screw some people up and take them out in the playoffs? That's the scene I want to see Kevin James pull up.
I hadn't even considered the fact that someone would be portraying Greg Williams. Can we please, please tell me it's someone else? Please tell me like Rob Schneider is playing Greg Williams. Can we just like get that cast together?
Here we go. Yes.
Alabaster, what do you know via IMDb?
It's Guy Fieri playing Greg Williams.
No, it's not.
Okay, that would be good.
Okay,
that'd be real good. It's all fun and games, by the way, until Sean Payton shows up on Debatable and puts a bounty on one of us.
I'll
he put a bounty on Charles's mic already.
he did. He
a take bounty.
The other thing about this that seems like it's going to pop up maybe 8 million times over the next year is that there is this long-standing rumor that Sean Payton would want to return to the Dallas Cowboys, and Jerry Jones sees Sean Payton as this guy who left and he desperately wants back. And the guy the Cowboys have as their head coach is Mike McCarthy, who is not exactly someone who the Cowboys seem especially thrilled to have hired as their head coach. So it's not going to happen this year. Like we set up on the card earlier, the Cowboys would owe compensation if it happened before 2024. But it kind of feels like this is inevitable, right?
Yeah. And I am honestly surprised that Mike McCarthy kept his job, because maybe this is just me overreacting to that game against the 49ers. But man, that punt sequence, I still can't get it out of my head. And I think if you're literally just looking at that, and you look at how much time.
Wait,
you
explain the punt sequence, Charles, for people who have forgotten this in ways that you clearly have not.
Can I? I'll go in depth on this then. So you remember back in the first game, the Super Wild Card Weekend, which was not super at all. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys, they're trying to come back into the game, and first of all, they throw a punt pass on fourth down, which you can like even, you know, argue with the process of that, because if I have to choose one, do I want my punter to throw it, or do I want my $40 million a year quarterback to it? But we can just take the results there. You get the first down, and this comes back to like where they were so undisciplined during the game, where, you know, they're getting penalties all during the game. And after they get that punt pass for first down, they are celebrating on the field so much that the referees allow the 49ers to sub in their first team defense. And for some reason, the Cowboys are looking across the ball and they see, you know, Fred Warner, Eric Armstead in the game, and they still have their punt team on the field, and it's first down. So I don't know why Mike McCarthy is sitting here saying, oh, well, they're going to call a timeout. Why would they call a timeout, Mike? They have their first team defense on the field against your punt unit on first down. So, you know, they're sitting there running around back in circles, the clock's ticking down, and then all of a sudden, well, let me rewind, because you have to remember, If the long snapper touches the ball, here's how you know they were never going to do anything. If the long snapper touches the ball after the fourth down on the first down, he cannot be subbed out of the game, which means they would have a long snapper blocking like a 300-pound defensive tackle. Obviously, just straight lunacy, but they still mess around with this punt motion stuff. Then they come off the field, which re-triggers the substitution sequence for the referee, which means he has to go back and stand on the ball as Dak Prescott is running onto the field, and he doesn't even have a play, because you can see he's looking back at the sideline, barking at Mike McCarthy, what are we going to do? Then he turns back to his teammates. They're all looking at him, what are we going to do? He starts barking something out, and as soon as they get set, play clock's done, first and 15, and you end up with a field goal on a driver you needed a touchdown, and even if you want to take that one step further, you wasted a minute off the game clock. Could have used that extra, 60 seconds at the end when Dak was out there sliding and not, you know, practicing what you guys did or did not practice in during the offseason. So, yeah. That's
so, just to be clear, that's bad.
That's all bad, yes. But, Neil,
the Jaguars okey-doke I mentioned earlier where you trick someone, but then you realize that you actually tricked yourself? That's what happened here with the Cowboys as well. Just a second classic self-okey-doke that you didn't realize was going to happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine Mike McCarthy's long for that job, because I feel like once Sean's ready and they can figure out some contract stuff in New Orleans, Derry will probably just hand that over to him.
Yeah, that's inevitable.
Yeah, that sounds right. Alabaster?
All right, guys. Our next topic.
Okay.
How do you think history will remember Ben Roethlisberger?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Will or should?
Yeah, will or should.
Great distinction. Question. Because we've already seen, Charles, the memory holing of the stuff that we should be talking about when we talk about Ben Roethlisberger, mm-hmm. right? Like, Alabaster, I'll ask you to put down the serious allegation cards so we can actually cite them journalistically responsibly. Because we've been sort of on the Ben Roethlisberger waving goodbye to football parade for weeks now. And every time it's discussed, we don't hear explicitly that, in fact, Ben Roethlisberger was accused twice of sexual assault, suspended for part of the 2010 season for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. Now, he denied both accounts, but there were settlements. There were questions about whether the police had fairly been involved in, I don't know, some suspicious aspects of the cleanup in the case in Georgia, for instance, which took place at a nightclub. There are details that I encourage you to go and explore. But the point is, I've been tired of Ben Roethlisberger for years. I am not going to miss him. He seems like a bad dude.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird to me that, you know, as we go through and Ben Roethlisberger finishes his career throwing for 2 yards per pass attempt and just being a mannequin out there, we're pretending like everyone likes him, which was the most confusing part for me. You know, Big Ben, you know, this beloved football legend. And I'm looking around asking my friends, do you guys like Ben Roethlisberger? Everyone says no back to me. Like, the only people I know who like him are like Steelers fans. So, and a lot of this goes back to, you know, the sexual assaults that were, you know, that caused him to get suspended for part of the season back in 2010, or the allegations, I should say. So I don't feel this heartwarming story. To me, it's just, you know, it was just due time, because he was standing, he represented all the things that I think football is attempting to move away from, but he's also getting celebrated and glorified at the same time, which is, I think it's just not a good spot for anyone to be in.
I mean, it feels almost like perfunctory, you know, like I think there is this thing in people's heads who are sort of, you know, broadcasting the games, or maybe necessarily thinking about the career, like, okay, well, this is a guy who won 2 Super Bowls, a guy who, won two Super Bowls. Am I crazy here?
Yeah, he won 2.
One Super Bowl. Won 2. Yeah. I think went to 2. One, two, a third, I believe. I'm a football writer.
1-2.
This
one
is very
two.
Helpful. You know, but like a guy who has been a quarterback forever, a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame probably. And like Charles said, like, does anyone outside of Steelers fans like Ben Roethlisberger? Is anyone going to miss Ben Roethlisberger play, like watching him play at this point?
Well,
like,
that's the aesthetics, Bill. Just the aesthetics of Ben Roethlisberger. It was almost like it was impressive what he was doing, because it looked like he shouldn't have been able to remain upright for that long. Which is not exactly a description of what I enjoy in sports.
No, like, it was someone who was like, you know, when you have a child running at an adult and they kind of run at them and bounce backwards because the adult is way bigger than them. That was really Ben Roethlisberger's game for the last couple of seasons. That and throwing the ball no more than 2 or 3 yards downfield 90% of the time. Like, that is the most unaesthetically pleasing football out there. Like, people love running the football. People love throwing deep. People love quick game. People love throwing the ball. People hate dinking and dunking, and they really hate dinking and dunking when it doesn't go anywhere. And that's what it felt like the Steelers were doing for the past couple of years. So even if you leave the off-field allegations aside, which I don't think you should, but even if you left that aside, like, this would still not be a person I would be missing or be upset about leaving. It's not a fun person to watch or interact with or engage with. Like, there's no good Ben Roethlisberger stories.
Yeah, and I think the most telling thing about where Ben Roethlisberger has been, you know, basically since he had an injury that nuked his ability to throw, is at the end of this season, we were all rooting for two division rivals playing for a playoff spot to tie in overtime so we didn't have to watch the Steelers play in the playoffs. That's all you need to know. We were rooting for.
I'm still mad about that we didn't get that.
We were rooting for a once in a lifetime opportunity, and for most people that I know, obviously it's cool just to see that, you know, that opportunity come to fruition and have them tie at the end of the season. But for a lot of people, it was, we don't want to watch the Steelers in the playoffs, and all those concerns were validated because they did nothing against the Chiefs.
Yes, and not only that, Not only that, one of the people who did not want to see the Steelers participate in the postseason, I'm pretty sure, was Ben Roethlisberger himself, who was like, you know, ready to go. Like, I played my last game. I'm good. Like, I'm happy. And then they had to play in the postseason, and it was almost like, you know, it was almost like he was like, I don't want to be here. I'm over. I'm done. I got my closure. I'm sick of this. Like, and I don't blame him. There was nothing left to do. They weren't going to beat the Chiefs. They even got up 7-0, I think, and it was a total mess. So I recognize in the big picture he is a famous player, and like the graphic says, like one of the most successful quarterbacks in the history of football. But everybody around him, even people who are boring off the field, are much more interesting just as football players than Ben Roethlisberger was to me.
Yeah, so look, he leaves with 165 regular season wins, what Alabaster has pointed out via card here. That is the fifth most of all time, right? And I feel like it is about his base. Who is his base? And it is a base in Pittsburgh that has only known him, right? And so the story of Ben Roethlisberger, how will he be remembered? Maybe it's fair to remember him as a guy who was a hero in Pittsburgh despite many good reasons for him to have been vilified. And everywhere else, he was a guy that everybody was kind of ready to see stop playing football a long time ago.
That's a really succinct way to put it. I don't know what else to say at this point.
That's very
he
fair.
He sucks. Like, I'm happy he's gone.
Yeah, turn up the take machine.
Yes, that's how you get a take bounty taken off your head, Bill. Yeah.
But I will say, I don't know what it's like to be him because I'm not a former NFL quarterback. Jeff,
that's right.
Please don't call Pablo.
That's right. I'm just gonna block him.
Just to stop Pablo from continuing with that bit. I do have a question for you guys. Sort of a football question about Ben Roethlisberger. He did sort of play in the golden era of NFL quarterbacks with Peyton and Brady and Rodgers.
And sure.
He was pretty awesome. Where do you sort? I'm gonna go full ESPN for a second. Where do you sort of rank him among this era of guys who managed to take two Super Bowls in an era when there was Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning and I guess Eli Manning getting multiple as well?
I guess I feel like Eli Manning. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah, don't make me do the bit that you hate on you, Alabaster. I don't. I mean, look, it feels like all of that question serves both as a reminder of like, wow, like, yes, Ben Roethlisberger had a good career, but also he had a worse career than lots of other guys at the same time, mm-hmm. as much as he was a guy who won two Super Bowls, right? Like, how do you rank him? I rank him well behind a lot of the guys that you mentioned, Eli Manning notwithstanding, but like, yeah, I don't see him as, I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? I respect that his resume stacks up in that way. I'm not here to argue that he's not on the merits, mm-hmm. but it feels like he's also not the guy I think of when I think of like, oh, who are the greatest quarterbacks I watched?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I don't consider Ben in this, you know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees class of passer. So for me, it's kind of hard to parse out like what I think of him in terms of the totality of his career, because obviously he's good. And I think, you know, when you're the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you win two Super Bowls and you're there for that long, while also putting up the numbers and winning the amount of games that he did, he'll probably get into the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I don't see him as, you know, one of the top guys, you know, Mount Rushmore of this past era of quarterbacks, because, you know, he's not better than Aaron Rodgers either. So when you start to pick out, like, amongst his peers, who is he better than? It's a clear drop off from, like, Brady, Brees, Manning, Rodgers, and then there's Ben and, you know, whoever else you want to put in that tier. But it's kind of interesting to talk about his legacy because he's not one of those guys, but he was still good enough and productive enough to have a Hall of Fame level career.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy where, like, he was never close to being considered the best quarterback in football. Like, I don't think there was ever a season where if you polled 100 NFL fans, they would say, oh, yeah, Ben Roethlisberger is the best quarterback in football. I don't think he was ever really that close. Like, I think he was maybe in the top three or top four once or twice at best. But, I mean, you know, he was never aesthetically pleasing. The numbers were good, but they were never, like, spectacular. He was, you know, always playing on a team that had a great defense. And so you can always kind of poke that hole in him of, oh, like, he's not doing it on his own. The offense isn't carrying this football team. Like, it's almost strange because I think there's two really famous Ben Roethlisberger highlights to me. One is the touchdown pass to Antonio Holmes in the Super Bowl, which is a great play. Number two is him tackling a Colts player on what would have been like a disastrous fumble that would have cost him a playoff game against the Colts, where he chased down a I think, I forget who it was in the Colts, but like chasing down a Tackleton to save a touchdown. And like, that's not what we think of when I think of quarterbacks. Like, I don't think of Tom Brady chasing down somebody who intercepted him, or Peyton Manning doing the same thing. Like, that should not be a key moment in a player's career. And yet, that, like, there's not many like conspicuous, legendary Ben Roethlisberger moments that stand out to me.
Right. It's sort of like, hey, you were better than Philip Rivers, and maybe that should be enough.
Maybe he wasn't, though. I don't know. That depends how much you care about rings.
Yeah, the aesthetics, though. Like, Philip Rivers looked like he was battling himself on every single pass and winning. That goes very far to me. Like, as opposed to Ben Roethlisberger, who looked like he was just, you know, like the biggest kid at the park and just was quarterbacked because no one else could take the ball away from him. Like, there's just a difference there that I appreciate Philip Rivers more because of.
Yeah. Alabaster, is your sports talk itch finally satisfied?
It is, and the show is nearing completion. We just have one bonus topic to show you, and it is a YouTube comment that I think is going to bring this all full circle from our friend Samuel Mace, who said, Ben Roethlisberger was the molasses flood his last season. Slow-moving with his flaws sugar-coated.
Wow.
We have come full circle. That was beautiful.
That was – that – good comment. Good comment. Good tweet, as we say in the game that we play on this show. Man, but how is it that a YouTube commenter was better than all of us at our job?
You're wrong. See, Pablo, you're wrong because he's never been undebatable before, so he can't qualify and know what we're talking about here.
Good point.
I'm going to call him up.
I've spoken to Sloan before. Sam never has. What has Sam never been?
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, you're never going to guess. You're never going to guess who's calling me right now.
Oh, God. You still doing this?
It's Jeff. Hold on. Jeff.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. Hello? Jeff! Hello! What's going on, man? Yeah, no, you've been watching the show and calling in. Yep. What was that? You love Alabaster. Wow. Why is that?
Hey, Alabaster's my friend. Also, stay away, Jeff.
Put upon Caucasian male who has way too much power that's got to attack him. His level of balance totally is outstripped by everyone else around him.
I can't believe you just stole Poppy Levitard bit with banana phone. That's what we're doing on the right now.
Oh, I love you, Alabaster.